baboon, big baboon, big baboon, big baboon, big baboon.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man.
You're listening to Fanboy vs. Fanboy. My name is Brian Kilby, a host of Radio Free Cybertron. With me, I have Chris Trippett, Chris McFeely, Ender, and JD Church. Hey, guys, tell us who you are. Chris Triplett.
You know me from New Soundwave, just a geek. I like comics.
What do you collect?
Well, now mostly DC. Marvel's kind of soured me a little bit, but love Spider-Man.
McFeely.
Hi, you probably don't know me. You might hear me if you go to the Moonbase 2 podcast. I am around on various forums. Did an interview in RFC a little while back. Not a regular appearer, but will be from now on. I'm here representing the other side of the Atlantic and the other side of the counter, because I am a comic book retailer as well. And I collect both Marvel and DC, but more Marvel and DC. I've only got into DC comparatively recently since I started working in comics. I've been a Marvel zombie for like 15 years now. So,
Ender.
Hi, I'm Ender. I am a comic reviewer for ENI and ComicNewsI.com. I principally read Marvel. And though I get a good deal of IDW these days as well, I enjoy the occasional DC, but could not claim much knowledge about it. It's not really my bailiwick.
JD.
I'm JD. You may know me from such podcasts as Radio Free Cybertron or New Soundwave. Primarily a Marvel collector, Batman fan, so get into that. And I'm also a renowned Superman hater, so there you go.
Not good. I primarily collect DC. Just a little bit about me. I used to have a 70-book-a-month habit, and it's now down to 5 books or so a month. I'm trying to get back in the swing of things, and really trying to get back into Marvel, because I really feel that I've been burned by Marvel because of everything that's happened since... Well, really, since before Civil War, and Siege seems to be...
It was Avengers disassembled for me.
Yeah, that's when it kicked off.
That's the big thing. After that, my interest just pretty much died for Marvel.
Yeah, and Siege seems to be like Marvel's attempt to go back to what they call the Age of Heroes, which, you know, I'd like to think of as like the age of pre-snarky writing. But
Marvel's got this theory that maybe people will buy more comics if everything doesn't suck in them.
Exactly. Siege number one was January's top selling comic, but is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's not a surprising thing one way or the other.
Well, it's been hyped for a long time. I mean,
yeah, they've been building to this
advertising. Yeah, it's a build up, and you know they're advertising a big change, which I think is... People are hoping the change will be good and they want to stick with it, but frequently in comics, if you miss what the change was, you will like never understand what's going on.
That's definitely a thing.
Oh, you're going to make things good next week? Well, I better read this week so I know what's going on next week when it gets good.
It seems like a change made with finally with the best of intentions in mind, rather than a change for the sake of just trying to make things different, which is how the last couple of big changes seem to have felt to me anyway.
Yeah, they seem to start like even really in the late 90s, if you ask me, sliding into this like every successive change in format made things less cool and more difficult. And I think they were trying to be edgy or something. I'm not sure it's worked in the end.
Well, I mean, yeah, they pretty much put a stop to big crossover format changes after what, Onslaught, basically. We didn't have another one of those until House of M, really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, yeah. X-Men back in the day lost me in like the story after Onslaught, which I think was Zero Tolerance. I just got bored. Yeah. I just got bored in the middle. I don't know. It was just like, okay, so we suck, and then it just sort of kind of end. It didn't, you know, like
that was probably
really
the
cool
first...
last week, and we had like, you know, a mansion full of alien technology and giant spaceships, and we could be anywhere doing anything any week. But now it's like mutants in a basement shooting out the windows. It was just like. Okay. I'm not sure that's probably a step up.
It was certainly the X-Men's first step towards existing in that little bubble outside of the rest of the Marvel Universe that they still exist in to this day, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think it had something to do with the movie, too. They kind of downgraded everything to be more movie-like because they wanted to stick with those fans. I mean, like, one morning I open up the comic and the team is nothing but, like, Wolverine, Jean Grey, and Wolverine, I'm sorry, Wolverine, Jean Grey. Cyclops, sorry.
I think you were right the first
yeah,
time.
That was really about it. And there were like plot lines about Wolverine and Jean Grey that ended, I don't know, 10 years ago that like all of a sudden were current again and Magneto was wearing black.
It was basically like, Mayor Morrison's run, isn't it, basically?
Butting up to that, yeah.
You know, I really think that Marvel's problem has been they want to be realistic. With Marvel Knights, they had this sort of edgier, more real-world feel. That's actually the reason they created Ultimate Marvel, was to more mirror what the comics would be like if they existed in the real world. Then Marvel brought this to the whole Marvel universe. Like, well, Civil War would be...
Who was in charge of Marvel Knights?
Joe Quesada.
Joey Q.
Marvel wanted to have this whole what would happen, you know, what would happen in the real world. So, well, obviously something like Civil War. And then we've just been playing back and forth Marvel in the real world for so long that people have forgotten why people read comics. It was because they're fun.
Everyone forgot why the Hulk was green.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's this never-ending cascade of the epic stories. One after the other after the other. And why can't we just have good stories on the individual lines and then maybe for a 3-issue run on part of the year, then we have maybe a big crossover among characters that make sense to cross over. But trying to do everything big all the time means there's nothing to build to. It's supposed to be at this high plateau.
They're just wanting to do the big events, I think, just to kind of keep up with DC.
I think that's DC's problem. DC's comics, DC stories are one gigantic climax after another, and it's making me crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, both companies seem to really be calming down this year. I mean, DC, foreseeably, seem to just be limited, and Marvel as well, sort of, seem to be limiting their events for the next year or so, anyway, to being smaller stories contained within families of books, essentially, you know, War of the Superman over on DC and Second Coming coming up on X-Men, neither of which I could give anything resembling a crap about. But
I'm actually really excited about the X-Men right now. The X-Men comics I've been reading lately are really good.
Yeah,
a lot of good character, a lot of good X-Men. I've always been an X-Men fan, so.
See, I love classic X-Men. I mean, for the lack of comics that were out this week, I've been making up time reading Essential X-Men Volume 9. I love classic Claremont X-Men. But essentially, once you cross over from Claremont to Nicieza, that's me. Bye-bye. I'm done. Thanks. Thanks for playing.
Well, that's not the world I'm living in, but.
No. X-Men Forever is the one X-book that I actually read, and
McFeely loves Chuck Austin. He loves him a lot.
That is like libel.
I thought I'd love X-Men Forever, and I just don't. I tried. It's my favorite era of X-Men, and I just can't get into it.
And I just wanted to give it a go because it sounded like an interesting concept. And you know what? Tell you, it just really pushed all the buttons for me. I'm as surprised as anybody else that this thing seems to have. And most people who comment on it seem to comment with surprise that it turned out to be decent more than anything else. Maybe I'm still coming down off that.
Now I'm pretty out of X-Men. What is X-Men Forever? Is that the Claremont book?
It's what if Claremont had carried on writing it back in the 90s?
Okay,
best what if concept ever.
Yeah. Of course, this is classic Marvel. Can't just let an idea be an idea. Now we've got X-Factor Forever and New Mutants Forever coming up in the next month.
Oh, wonderful.
Louise Simonson returns to X-Factor, and I don't even remember. Was it maybe it's Claremont doing New Mutants? I don't know. Let an idea just be.
If Rob Liefeld were on New Mutants, I would be happy. But
you go pick up Deadpool Core. He's on that.
He'll probably do covers, Brian.
Oh, God. He should stick to Levi commercials.
The nice thing about X-Men right now, if you ask me, is that they've finally found a good dynamic for, like, mixing up teams of characters that make sense. Like, they don't seem to be – it's not just, like, this is the team of characters we keep in this comic book. Like, whatever storyline's going on, they seem to pluck the ones that make sense to go deal with that. And everyone seems to be like sensibly characterized for like having lived in a universe that long. Like even just like, yeah, Magneto and Cyclops would probably just call each other by their first names at this point. You know, I mean, like these two,
of course,
been,
it's all
for whatever reason, have been in the same room together for 30 years. You know, just like
it'll all be turned on its head in about 2 months' time, of course. And then where will it be? You know, it always makes you wonder why they bothered to do the. I mean, I read what was it called? Exodus? Utopia. I read Utopia because it was a. Well, I was going to say it was a crossover with Dark Avengers, but let's be honest, it was an X-Men story that the Dark Avengers guest starred in. So I know where they are now, but that was what, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, and we're about to get the next big change of play next month, and it's like, what the hell is the point anyway? Like X-Men, man, they're forever trying to reinvent. Well, it's kind of, I guess, I was going to say it's kind of Morrison's fault, but it's not
it
really.
It is Morrison's fault.
Well, it's Marvel's fault for immediately trying to undo what Morrison did.
Because Morrison, I mean, when he left, just like it was parts of that what he was doing, like, wow, that's cool and original, and other stuff where it was like, dude, you're just trying to break the toys.
He flipped the table over when he left.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, okay, well, we'd like to keep making money if that's okay with you, so we're just going to say that didn't happen.
Grant Morrison is undeniably a genius, but he's also insane.
Yeah, well, the best what he did to the X-Men that they're still recovering from is he made Magneto categorically right.
Yes.
You can never get away from that now. Like, every old comic you read, it's almost like he retconned it, so the X-Men are just always wrong. Because eventually, all the mutants are going to get slaughtered.
If they left Magneto alone,
the mutants probably would have won. And though that would be, you know, bad for humans, Magneto always has a point now. You know, it's like, actually,
I read the entire
they killed us.
Run, so. Well, it's not, well, I mean, Wanda killed them.
No, I'm talking about Genosha.
Oh, right. Well, that was...
That's what I'm talking about. That's when Magneto became forever right. Because a week earlier, they stopped him from marching out of there with an army. Because they were all going to get killed. Magneto was like, humanity's going to kill us all if we don't fight back, so I'm going to lead an army out of here. And the X-Men stopped him. And then, like the next month, oops, everyone in Genosha's dead.
Well, that wasn't humanity, mm-hmm. though.
Too bad we listened to Baldi. Well, it was Sentinels.
Yeah, but it was Cassandra Nova, did it?
Yeah, they were still Sentinels.
Well, I know what you're saying anyway.
In any case.
Of course, the irony, of course,
is that if the X-Men had stayed home the week before and, like, you know, had some milky tea, mutant kind probably would have survived.
Making Magneto right, he created, like, the worst incarnation of Magneto. He just completely missed everything to do with the character. And that was, like, the first thing Marvel undid.
The first five was like, yep, we cut Magneto's head off after he killed everyone in New York. But it wasn't him. He was over here the whole time.
Yeah, that pisses me off. That pisses me off so much. Well, yeah, let's change gears.
What are we talking about this week?
The Daredevil reboot's finally been greenlit. The movie.
Yay.
Who cares?
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, this is
like comic book movies. I like them.
I love comic book movies. Daredevil wasn't a good comic book movie, but why is Marvel having to reboot it? I mean, other than the ending being awful, the movie itself is salvageable.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they don't want people to remember the movie, I don't think.
Yeah.
Well, just because a little while in, basically.
It was more salvageable than the Hulk. You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you say reboot, I mean, I guess the question is, how much of a reboot are we talking? Are we going to get Daredevil's origin again, or are we just going to get Are we just going to get like Norton's Hulk, where it's just like the next? Here we go, move on.
You know, if it was like Norton's Hulk and they had the intro that was an homage to the Bill Bixby Hulk, I would be totally okay with
that again.
Yeah, so they could have the homage to the Incredible Hulk movie that had
the trial of the Incredible Hulk.
I was just thinking that.
Because let's be honest, it does not
a little loser in spandex doing little kung fu moves. Right.
The first Daredevil movie took 45 minutes to tell you that he loved his dad. So we really don't need to cover this territory again.
No, we don't. We absolutely do not.
So
I think whenever the Hulk movie or indeed, you know, any this Spider-Man reboot, you guys have talked about that in New Soundwave before, so we'll not tread old ground. But basically, those are movies that don't need to do the origin again because everybody and their granny's dog knows the origin of Spider-Man and the Hulk. I don't know if everybody really knows Daredevil's origin, you know? Do they want to rely on the old film, or do you want to make such a clean break that you go over the ground?
You know, I've read some...
a flashback that'd cover it. I mean...
Yeah, well, it was...
You could do that. I've read so many Marvel comics...
Anyone who's seen the Ninja Turtles knows Daredevil's origin.
Yeah. Exactly. But, you know, I've read so many Daredevil comics, I can't tell you what the origin is because it keeps getting retconned.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's like
I've never been a big Daredevil fan, so I couldn't even tell
Frank
you.
Miller re-retconned his origin, and then Joe Kelly went and retconned that. So, I mean, it's kind
of... Well, he's still struck in the face by a canister of glue by a truck. What did they change?
They changed, what happened with his father. And so his father being murdered or not being murdered, it's just been changed over and over. But, I mean, it was changed in quick succession, kind of like Spider-Man's origin when they decided to go ahead and give the reins to John Byrne.
Ye not of it.
Exactly. But, I mean, it happened.
We will not be discussing that here.
Speaking of something we shouldn't be discussing, Absolute Justice, which was the Smallville.
Hey, I just watched that today, yeah.
What did you think? What did you think?
I'll tell you what I think. Yeah, I didn't like it.
Triplet didn't like it. McFeely, you watched it.
I was entertained, by and large.
Icicle.
I don't feel remotely inclined to watch any more Smallville.
Smallville should have ended 5 seasons ago.
I know. Every time I think of Smallville or someone mentions something about Smallville, I have one thought. Good God, that's still on?
Still on? Yeah.
I think in my mind it got canceled
in season two.
9 seasons.
It's been on for 9 seasons.
It should have ended 9 seasons ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tom Welling is older than Superman is now.
I liked Smallville at the start.
Me too.
As I always say, I have a fierce number of customers who watch Smallville, and basically it's from them repeatedly coming in and saying, hey, this is coming up soon, that I'm like, all right, I will watch it, and I will discuss it.
And you want to watch it to be conversant, I assume.
Yeah, Justice Society, written by Jeff Johns, I mean...
But it was there needs to be a Justice Society movie that needs to be nothing at all like that.
Needs a bigger budget's what it needed.
Yeah, yeah.
You could really tell TV budget when you saw this.
Dr. Fate's molded plastic helmet was awesome.
Yeah.
I like Dr. Fate being crazy and talking to a bag.
I didn't like Icicle killing Dr. Fate with an icicle.
Yeah.
I think it's just the icicle in general. It's like, could have come up with somebody better than that, but...
I mean, in Batman Brave and the Bold, they at least pulled Degaton out. Degaton's not like a huge JSA villain, but he appeared in one of my favorite story arcs. But they picked Icicle.
In previous seasons, Clark fought Doomsday. So if he can fight Doomsday by himself, I think the JSA can take Icicle by himself.
Yes.
I mean, Smallville, as I've always said, it's a finite concept. And I enjoyed it when I was under the misguided belief that perhaps they would adhere to that notion. But now that it's turned into, essentially, what if Superman never became Superman?
Exactly.
Just something else entirely. But they keep pegging away at the idea that he is eventually going to become Superman.
Yeah, well,
when he's 50? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, you know, Superman, if he never became Superman, it's sort of like, well, you mean like if your marketing team never came up with anything new to do ever and you just kept writing the same show for 9 seasons?
That's why we have you on the show, Ender. for comments like that. That's absolutely true. I agree with you 110%.
I mean, I'm watching this movie. I didn't realize going into this thing today that he's working at the Daily Planet now.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at that, and it just doesn't fit in my head that I'm supposed to be looking at the adult Clark Kent working in a major metropolitan. It looks like he's there on an internship or something.
Tom Welling is
that he's the Clark Kent that we know now at this point. Likewise,
I just want them to open up a show and have like Dean Cain walk on screen and like push him off and be like, out of the way, Junior.
Dean Cain did a guest.
Let's get back to business here.
Yeah.
Dean Cain played Vandal Savage or something in a recent
really?
Season. Well, maybe I don't know. This is what I heard. Somebody confirm, please.
So,
does anybody Dean Cain actually watch Smallville?
Yeah, I watch it. There was an episode that Dean Cain was in, but I don't remember if he was Vandal Savage.
Vandal Savage would have been awesome, dude. That'd have been great. Vandal Savage should have been in this episode instead of frickin' Icicle.
I agree with
that. I got the impression from all the ads that all this episode is like the coolest collection of prop replicas in the world.
That's about
like
it.
If this was your basement and you had like the JSA table, the pictures, and all those little bits and pieces of crap they were wearing, you'd be awesome. You would be the
that
best.
That is the absolute
ever.
Coolest bit of the whole thing. Yeah. Whenever
it's like it's a cool set. It's like when the set is the highlight of your show.
My biggest problem is, dude, was Dr. Fate just like a midget or something? Nothing. I ain't got no problem with a midget.
Tiny.
But he was so short.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. He floats around and so on and so forth. It's not a big deal.
Oh, but there he was walking next to the Martian Manhunter in one scene, and he was only up to the middle of his chest. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Maybe it's just because he's old, because they're all old now, and so he's going to shrink some.
They weren't that old.
I would like to look that old when I hit, well, they must be. If they still
old on television is 32.
Tom Welling is 32. And,
is he only 32?
Yeah, that's the actor is 32. The comic character, I'm assuming at this point, is about 26.
It's got to be pushing 40.
Yeah, it's I don't even want to know. Hey, so let's go ahead.
I know how time flows in the Marvel universe. I don't know where time is in DC. Yeah.
You have to wait for Batman to show up and be looking at his watch and be like, dude, come on, what's up?
Can we?
Yeah. So let's go ahead and jump into what we read this week. For me, did anyone else read Red Robin number 9?
Me.
No.
So does anyone have a general idea of what this comic series is about?
Yes.
I really like it. So basically, the first 8 issues had Tim Drake running around looking for Bruce Wayne, who he believes is still alive. And he's being ordered around basically by Ra's al Ghul, which I think is the greatest idea ever. The execution on the book is so-so, but issue 9 basically has Tim Drake going up against the minions of Ra's al Ghul, who is basically going to try to take over Wayne Enterprises or destroy it. The book itself was okay, but you know, as far as like the Batman family spinoff books, this is my favorite one, even better than
Who's
like Detective Yo, something Yo. I think the guy's last name is Yo.
Oh, okay.
It's Yost in it.
Is it? Yeah. Is it?
It's Yost in it. I think.
I should know this stuff, but. Just like really from the fact that it passes under my nose every day, but there you go.
I like to think of when you said that it was like Ra's al Ghul sending someone out to look for Bruce Wayne because he's sure he's alive.
No, Tim Drake.
Tim Drake's sure he's alive, but he's taking orders from. I just assume they both were on the same premise.
Well, Chris Yost, Brian.
Okay, Chris Yost.
Oh, is it Chris Yost? I don't know.
Okay, so he believes that Bruce is still alive. He's trying to undermine what Ra's al Ghul was doing while simultaneously looking for Bruce.
Okay. If you say Ra's al Ghul, I could just see him sitting there and be like, I know he's alive because this is a comic book.
Yes, exactly.
I like the idea that there's like one character in the DC universe that still thinks Bruce is alive, and it's him.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
I think that's great. But yeah, the book itself.
Yeah, someone else who came back from the dead, he's like, no one dies here. This is stupid. What do you mean he's dead?
Of course, they're playing with that over in Batman and Robin as well.
Yeah, that was now in Batman and Robin. Grant Morrison is insane. It's obvious to come up with the idea to throw Bruce's body into a Lazarus pit, but Batman, I'm calling him Batman. Dick, yes. was preparing everyone for Bruce to be resurrected and be crazy. So he had enough people there to wrestle him down for when they throw him into the Lazarus pit. That is insane and awesome.
Right, did they get Superman? Because like, who the hell else is going to wrestle Batman down?
Superman's on the planet as well.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, Batman crazy for like 10 minutes could be like a nuclear holocaust.
Absolutely could. Yes. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Batman and Robin is a good book. It's not like my favorite. It's not like my ideal version of Batman, but it's a fun book.
It's certainly
Batman pressed Lazarus pit. Shouldn't he just go straight to Ra's al Ghul and be like, so that whole marry your daughter and take over the world thing? I've been thinking about that.
Of course, I suppose we'll have to see how it turns out, but I suppose really he shouldn't come back from this because I don't know how you want to explain it, but his spirit.
He's going to be fighting pirates and Vikings.
Yeah, fighting pirates and cavemen and stuff in a month or two. So
everyone needs to follow Time Lost Batman on Twitter. Time Lost Batman is awesome.
He's crazy.
I haven't followed that. I don't know.
You need to look that up. Time Lost Batman. It's basically this dude who's recounting what Batman's doing throughout history, fighting Vikings and all sorts.
He's basically just hitting everybody. Is all he's doing.
Yeah.
Batman is nuts. Someday I'd like to write the Batman spinoff book called Damaged Goods.
So Batman is nuts is kind of the whole theme of Morrison's Batman.
Yes, absolutely. I also read JSA Annual, but not worth mentioning. I mean,
I was going to, but then I didn't. I'm gonna drop Sturges and Willingham's JSA.
I like Willingham's writing on JSA, but I hate
I want to like it.
But I hate that they split the team up into two books. Wow!
Can you like miss the point of what Geoff Johns was doing anymore?
Yeah, I know. It's absurd. But yeah, it's not even worth mentioning. I read it. We can get a little more into Siege, too, later on. McFeely, you read Siege, and you also read The Torch?
The Torch, yes. Probably the only person on the planet left actually doing that at this point.
Is it like it's the Human Torch? Or
the Human Torch, the android Human Torch. Yeah. Jim Hammond. Mad Thinker dealing with bringing him back. Spins out of... Avengers Invaders from last year, where Toro was brought back to life by the Cosmic Cube, and him trying to save the Torch. Because the Torch died a couple of years ago, died, air quotes, android, in New Invaders a couple of years back. And this is about him coming back, and Toro coming back, and whoop-de-doo. It's grand. It's Mike Carey, so you kind of know what you're getting. Mike Carey, a bit hit and miss as a writer, but... I like the concept. It pushes the. I'm one of those. I'm a real like continuity freak, a complete nerd for when people make like historical continuity references. And this is dealing with how Toro got his powers and a secret connection to the Torch and stuff like that. I'm enjoying it well enough.
Any reference to like the Vision or anything like that?
No, that is the. I don't think they have to. They drew a veil over that years ago.
Oh. Gotcha.
Did you read them? Do you know what happened there? Or, I mean,
Avengers Forever. I may have been confusing something. Did he get split in two, or am I thinking of Kang?
No, you got it. That's what happened. He Immortus used the Forever Crystal to boobly boo, and then there were two of them.
That's an industry term I'm not familiar with.
So in Avengers Forever,
I mean wibbly wobbly stuff.
So in Avengers Forever, both Human Torch and Kang got ripped in two.
Yes, but I think the Kang thing was more of a. I guess it was both literal and metaphorical.
There's a lore because they referenced the ripping sound, which I remember to this day.
It was a metaphorical representation of Kang's destiny being separated from Immortus, so he doesn't have to become Immortus anymore. But yeah, the fact that they did literally represent it with the two of them ripping apart was... I need to reread Avengers Forever. That's too long since I read that.
Yeah, and it also introduced Captain Marvel, the genus Captain Marvel, into the Marvel universe. And I love me some Captain Marvel until they...
Did it introduce him, or did it just establish that he would be an Avenger in the future?
It established it. He already existed before that.
He didn't exist as Captain Marvel. He existed.
He existed before as Captain Marvel. There was the failed Captain Marvel series.
Did he have the shiny black star face?
He had like the ponytail or something.
That's right. And they combined, then they merged Genesis and Rick Jones together.
Yeah, they merged them in Avengers Forever because Rick Jones was dying.
That's what they did.
Oh, Avengers Forever.
That was such a fun book.
I love the way it just like stops halfway through for Kurt Busiek to fix every error in Avengers history ever across the span of two issues. Then the story just moves off again.
Okay, that's
I love that. I know it's like that's like terrible storytelling, but it really pushes my button.
Okay, Triplet, what did you read?
Oh gosh, what did I read? Buffy. The new issue of Buffy, Red Robin number 9, Siege number 2, and is that it?
Catch us up on Buffy. Is it worth reading?
I think it is.
Have you fallen victim to the spoilers that have leaked surrounding Buffy?
I have heard what's happened, so yeah. No, nothing's happened in the comic yet. to back that up. So I don't know. I mean, is that an actual spoiler or is that just?
Oh yeah, that's coming up. I think in next month's issue.
Next month's issue.
Is this major?
It's
oh yeah, it's pretty major.
Of
yeah,
the masked big bad for the storyline.
Oh
yeah, there's been a masked bad guy for the whole storyline. And
his name is Twilight.
Yeah, his name's Twilight.
let's not spoil. But after the podcast, it'd be interesting knowing who it is. So.
Keeping, I have to dance around this with all the customers because I don't know how many of them have heard the leak and who haven't, you know. But basically, yeah. I think the cover of April's issue, I think, leaked, and it's got the unmasked face on the cover. And the unmasking happens at the end of March's issue, I think. I don't read Buffy, so I shouldn't talk like I know what I'm talking about. But
at the end of this issue, he's basically.
Well, I changed this habit.
Exactly.
He's killing the plan, basically. So I can see, like, the next issue, probably him unmasking.
I don't read anything, and I try to speak authoritatively as possible, so.
It's all about the confidence.
Exactly. Ender, what did you read? You read a ton of stuff.
I read a ton of stuff. I read Siege 2. I read that black and white Iron Man they did, Indomitable Iron Man. I read Doctor Who. I read Invincible Iron Man 23, Berserker number 4, which no one has heard of for probably good reasons. I read G.I. Joe Origins number 12. I read Deadpool Team Up 896. I think that's it. Did I get any more than that?
What would you recommend of what you read?
I enjoyed Siege 2. It's, you know, there was a bit in it I thought was disappointing and silly.
I think that's the next topic of discussion.
So I won't go too far off into that. The Doctor Who comic is really good, but probably mostly if you're a fan.
Do you know we can't get that over here?
You're kidding.
Seriously.
IDW can't distribute that comic in the UK.
Really?
Insane.
That makes no sense.
Wow. That's
how does that happen?
So do you like not get like Union Jack comics when they come out?
When was the last time that came out? I understand that the last Union Jack comic was actually friggin' great. It was a brilliant series. No, I don't know what it is. It's some kind of licensing thing. It's like there's a UK company who does Doctor Who comics over here already, and it's like some kind of
just Titan.
I don't know,
or something.
Well, Titan. I don't know. I don't read Doctor Who comics. I like Doctor Who, but I don't read the comics. But it's something like that. They can't bring them out here because someone else is already bringing out their own stuff, and they don't want like cross confusion or something. I don't know. It's ridiculous, anyway.
I tried to read that Doctor Who, but I couldn't get past the art, so I just.
Yeah, they're trying too hard to make it look like just like the people sometimes, and it just looks really weird.
It doesn't look like anything.
Yeah, exactly. It was better this issue.
Straight on.
It was better this issue than last. They seem to be getting over it, but it was, yeah.
Is the Doctor Who comics like a continuous story, or are they kind of like one shots?
No. Usually they're a continuous story. These ones are still
a selection of minis, right?
I think they did. They used to do minis more often, and they.
Oh no! It's an ongoing now, isn't it?
It's an ongoing now.
Yeah,
and pretty good. He's got like his own companions going. The tone seems right. I mean, they're writing David Tennant's Doctor pretty well, I think.
So it's the David Tennant Doctor.
Yeah,
it's the David Tennant. Okay.
Yeah, and they're really pulling stuff like way out of the past. I mean, they were like referencing long dead companions and. Stuff, you know, he says a line he said in the first episode because he's having a little time confusion moment and stuff. And I was thinking, like, how would anyone know that if you hadn't watched all these things?
Sounds like the sort of thing IDW would do rather than actually try to do something new and interesting.
Yeah. Well, the story itself. But they are, you know, I think the first, this was the last issue, the opening panel of the comic was David Tennant, like, wearing Sylvester McCoy's hat and Tom Baker's scarf and. Coat, you know.
That's pretty. That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was. You know, they do. There's some good sort of fan wankery in there, but I don't know if it would work for anyone who wasn't familiar with classic Doctor Who.
I doubt there's anybody reading them that isn't ultimately.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. It's like, yes, that's, you know, that's your audience, though. I mean, so how did you?
It's terribly miserable to highlight it, but let's be honest. I mean, you know, it is only geeks that read comics.
That's what they do wrong in their Transformers comics is not realize that their, you know, readership is 97% fans who have expectations.
It happened once in the past. It'll probably never happen again that you get people reading Transformers books. But
yeah. With some of these licensed properties, what you buy for when you buy the license is like a finite, guaranteed audience.
Yeah.
You know.
You make so much money. It's
never going to go away. So,
okay, for good or for ill.
What else do you read, Ender?
It's
worth reading.
It's worth reading?
Yeah.
Did you read Ultimate X, Ender?
No, I didn't.
I read it.
I did have a leaf of it as well. Yeah, it was probably the least wretched thing Jeff Loeb's written in the last year or two.
Well, the best thing I can say about it is Art Adams is back and he's still
drawing. Oh, I know. Oh, Art Adams. I love Art Adams so much.
Yeah.
And I can't believe fucking Jeff Loeb and Frank Cho doing this terrible, bound to be terrible. I hate to judge it ahead of time, but let's be honest. Ultimate Comics, New Ultimates as well. I'd love to see Jeff Loeb write a book with an artist nobody's ever heard of and see how many sales he gets then. I really hate that Art Adams is being squandered on Jeff Loeb.
I'm so done with Ultimate.
Jeff Loeb has done some good stuff. It's just been a decade and a half.
Yeah.
Does the Ultimate logic confuse anyone else where they seem to have been like, oh, well, Ultimates isn't doing so great anymore. Let's run it into the ground and climax it and destroy everything and get rid of all the good characters, and then let's make some more.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that they have actually said anything. It's a self-defeating imprint, you know? The idea was new universe, no continuity to worry about, and it worked until it developed 10 years of continuity, and people needed to know that. It's a pointless thing now, but I still read Ultimate Spider-Man, and I still really enjoy it.
Yeah, I still read it. That's it right now.
Best Ultimate book, best Bendis book.
It's an implied inferiority to the regular Marvel universe, because let's go, this is the Ultimate version. This is a better version of this character. Well, Marvel, like with Ultimate Spider-Man was far and away better than regular Spider-Man.
At the time.
But now, Spider-Man is far and away better than Ultimate Spider-Man. So what's the point of Ultimate Spider-Man? I don't really care about this anymore, especially since, you know, Bendis went from being a really good writer on Ultimate Spider-Man, like around issue 1 through like 60, to being like Bendis, you know, like in the new series, because the new series reads just like Bendis, not like old Bendis.
I don't know. I still enjoy Bendis' solo books these days. I still enjoy Ultimate Spider-Man anyway. Although it does kind of feel like a dumping ground at this point for the characters whose books got cancelled and haven't been rebooted yet.
Human Torch and Iceman, and who else is there?
Well, Kitty Pryde is there, but she'd kind of already become part of the supporting cast by that stage anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it for now, but I'm just waiting for the Ultimate X, whoever he is, to move in.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chris mentioned Ultimate X. Anything else, Ender, worth reading that you read, or anything particularly awful?
There was that Cable, so I think it was 23, was incredibly episodic. And it's just like, I kind of thought where they were going with that was cool like a year ago when they started him like running around, but now they're like doing this like time jumping thing where it's like, we're in this time period for 5 minutes and now we're going to go to this one. It's like, didn't you guys already do this in a Cable versus Deadpool like 3 years ago?
Is he fighting pirates?
No pirates.
That's a complete missed opportunity.
You know, I think if he was fighting pirates, it probably would have been a decent book. But it was really just like, can we get on with this? I just want like the that Monty Python scene where everyone just starts like, get on with it! With the whole like, thing. That's where I'm at. It's like, get on with it!
It's been everywhere.
You've been fighting Apocalypse for years. X-Force was here 10 minutes ago. What, you know, like, can we just like do this?
It is amazingly blatant padding for time at this point.
It's just like,
I'm surprised there's still a Cable comic, and this is a monthly comic, right?
Yeah. Well, it's about to end. It's ending now. The 22nd kicks off because it has no purpose anymore. It seems basically that it's only existing to show us what's happening to Hope, the girl, until Second Coming happens, after which it will have no purpose anymore.
This comic
and they're renaming the final issue.
Hope, like walking around in an apartment for like an hour.
And they're renaming the final issue.
You know, it could have been anything. There's no reason to read it. The other thing that was particularly awful, I thought they did the Indomitable Iron Man, and it was like, it wasn't. You know, it was just completely pointless. the stories weren't that good. They were trying to get, like, you know, modern writers writing old style, you know, stories. And it's like, it's called like Indomitable Iron Man Black and White. And it's like, yeah, Indomitable Iron Man, not worth coloring.
this was like
to the Doctor Strange Black and White that they've got coming up in a month or two, though. I can't remember who's doing that, but there was a
apparently
name.
Apparently, it'll be not worth coloring number two.
There's a creator on that that really makes it sound like it will be worth reading, but I forget who it is.
You know, I worried that this was like the Chuck Austin War Machine comic, which was in white and weekly.
It had like a bad prose fanfic at the end of it. It felt like it was like Tony Stark fighting clones of himself while trying to do a like weblog or something. It was just like, what?
Oh yeah, I'm not a that's what.
I'm gonna have to that. And making jokes about it. It was just like, huh?
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not reading that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm always up for Marvel doing a little bit more experimentation with format. But did anybody read the Strange Tales the last couple of months?
No.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well.
Alrighty then.
Hey, I'm a bad nerd. I've made that point before.
Marvel has hurt me, and I don't want to be hurt anymore.
We aging dorks are so emotionally fragile.
Oh, dear. But no, McFeely, I haven't read that.
Well, that was just a case of like indie creators doing short strips of various characters in an ads-free, whatever, 64-page or 48-page book, and there was some brilliant stuff in it, and there was some absolutely insane nonsense in it.
Sounds almost like Wednesday Comics.
Ads-free. Ads-free just says they couldn't get any ads.
Yeah. Well, no, they just charged more money for it. It was clearly trying to pretend it was special by not having any ads in it. But it was they did Peter Baggy's Incorrigible Hulk, a long shelf one shot was serialized and released through that, and there was a load of some Jonan Vasquez stuff in there. I can't remember
really?
Half. Yeah, there's a short story in there where he did a child who dressed up as MODOK while all his friends dressed up as the more popular superheroes, and MODOK came along and took the child away.
I'm going to track down.
You know, Priest.
All back. I want to read that.
You know, Priest actually made MODOK for me with what was the Captain America miniseries, or was it Captain America and Falcon?
It was a monthly one. Yeah,
That was just creepy and weird and awesome. And
nobody ever does MODOK creepy and weird and awesome anymore. Everybody just does MODOK as hilarious. Yeah, actually, well, this is Jeff Parker. You know, you can't go wrong with Jeff Parker. You go wrong with Jeff Loeb, but Jeff Parker's overpowered.
Did anyone else see the MODOK organ harvesting room? That was nice and creepy.
Yeah, that was Jeff Parker.
Hey, JD, what did you read?
Many things that are either things we're not discussing or things that we're discussing in a minute. But I did read Iron Man 23, which is a part of the Stark Disassembled series. Which is involving Tony in a coma-ish stage.
What's
and
more exciting than Iron Man in a coma?
Yeah, you know, I mean, come on. So
it's gotta be the third coma he's
I gave those, I gave the book good stars. I mean, it was a good read, but yeah.
No, it was decent. I mean, it's the whole, and you know, I don't know if you want to use that as a lead-in because to talk about Siege, but the whole in Broxton, Oklahoma thing is really throwing me off. Mainly because I grew up there. And there's nothing there.
There's not even a gas station.
No. I mean, literally, my house was 6 miles from Broxton. There is nothing there. There is absolutely
Tony's going to wake up and feel like he's still in a coma.
Yes. And it just pulls me. I mean, it's a me thing. I get that because, you know, obviously most of the readership has no idea. But it just I don't know, it always pulls me out because they're like Main Street Broxton. And I just laugh because it's like there's no Main Street in there. There isn't even a street.
I imagine anybody who read Civil War and lives in Stamford probably had a similar reaction.
But yeah. But
they
otherwise,
Soldier Field last week. I didn't bat an eye.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, that's, yeah, Volstagg got framed there. That was, I love the fact that they started it off with Volstagg.
Yeah. Now, who doesn't love Volstagg?
Volstagg, whoops.
That was so great.
Really?
So did you like Iron Man 23, JD?
Yeah, I did. I'm definitely, I mean, I kind of started cold on it, so I've got to go back and read the other pieces. So I'm definitely interested in where it came from and as far as where they're going to go. Because, hey, this Doctor Strange is there, you know, because why not?
Well, wasn't it kind of disconcerting, though, because art-wise, isn't Doctor Strange and Tony Stark with the goatee just like a couple of gray highlights off?
Yeah, but, you know, they have a different wardrobe styling, thankfully. So, I mean,
not that Doctor Strange should be going around, not to play continuity cop, but Doctor Strange really shouldn't be going around in that and sporting that level of power at this right now.
I was waiting for. I think Doctor Strange should like find out that Tony Stark's in a coma and be like, "Yeah, I'll be right there," and then like go get some like highlight coloring and go to Stark Tower and be like, "How's it going? Make me a martini."
Doctor Strange has more epic mustache.
Yeah,
a more epic mustache. That's great.
Tony, well, I don't know how they're drawing him right now. I'm not reading Iron Man right now, but I do actually want to go back and pick up the trades of Most Wanted because I hear very good things. But Tony should have a slightly thinner mustache. He should be pretty pencil thin.
I've not read Iron Man.
He has a full goatee now because of the movie. He always has a goatee now.
I've not read Iron Man since Kurt Busiek wrote Iron Man.
Oh, gorgeous.
I think brilliant. The Warren Ellis thing was the last thing I read.
And I don't like Warren Ellis, so that's...
I dropped it. Yeah, I dropped it on Warren Ellis. But then, to be honest, that was me saying, you know what, I've just gone through 4 years of crap here. Well, you know, no. I suffered through Joe Quesada and Mike Grell and...
Frank Thierry.
Chuck
Austin. Well,
Frank Thierry was still better than... Oh, God, that's right. Chuck Austin did write a bit of it.
I don't know. Did no Frank Thierry? That's who I'm thinking of.
Oh no, yeah, because they were like pretty much interchangeable at that point.
Yeah, at that point.
Who was the other one? John Jackson Miller. That was pretty terrible as well. And nobody knew what to do with Iron Man after Busiek left.
I think the highlight of this Iron Man comic was actually the Iron Man's infidelity, even while he's in a coma.
Well, I did see that.
Pepper and what's her name? Bill. Yeah.
Sitting there like, well, I just. Oh well, I. Oh.
Like, wow, I shouldn't have slept with Tony last week. She's like, you what?
Okay, guys, so let's go ahead.
So let me get this straight. I'm going to wake up in a room with two women I slept with 40 minutes ago, 10 minutes apart, in a town where the chest freezer down the road is probably the closest thing to a convenience store. Yeah, I think I'll just stay here. That's okay.
Okay. Speaking of all this, let's go ahead and jump into Siege. Siege number two and Siege in general. This is Marvel's big push to get back into the quote-unquote Age of Heroes.
Age of money.
The Age of Money. So, you know, I would be happy. And Chris made the point. Chris Triplett made the point before that, you know, Avengers Disassembled is probably what ruined everything. I don't think I would be happy anything short of Roger Stern writing the Avengers.
I just
it's
like
not going to happen.
I mean, you know, going back to like the status quo, to like things were back in the 70s, and like forget all this crap ever happened. That's about what would have to happen for me to be satisied with.
You're saying like after Siege, what it should be is like Thor and Iron Man and Captain America, Vision.
No Spider-Man.
No Spider-Man. No Wolverine. I agree. No Spider-Man. No Wolverine. Yeah. They just walked into a room and were like, "And now we will never talk about the last 10 months ever again."
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think that is too far from believability, to be completely honest. I mean, I don't know if you guys have...
After Civil War, I mean, like, that was the problem with Civil War, again, on the, like, breaking everybody's toys format. It's like, so Iron Man and Captain America are just going to be like, yeah, I'm sorry about that, man.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is,
we destroyed half the country in an ideological struggle over which of us was good and the other evil. I'm sorry.
Is it silly that I could almost believe that those two guys would actually do that, though? Friends
well,
of that
are they hang out with? I mean, really.
Batman and Superman, yes.
You can't drink, you're a superhero. You can't go out in public, you're a celebrity. You've got a security detailer. Who else are you going to hang around with except Captain America?
Yeah, you're kind of stuck. Have you guys seen the image for the heroic
Age? Tony? Yeah, Steve. Yeah, I do.
Have you guys seen the teaser image for the Heroic Age?
The one that's in shadow?
No.
There's not a shadow. It's that Spider-Man.
Well, I mean, I don't know what all websites are doing it. I'm following it on Newsarama personally, but there's these periodic teasers that are appearing to show us who is part of the team. And this far, officially, they've confirmed Cap, Iron Man, Thor, and Hawkeye, and Spider-Woman.
Now, is it Steve Rogers or is it the Bucky Cap?
That's the mystery. It's the Bucky Cap costume, but he's got
the Steve Rogers. Age. I've seen. Well, it has Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, that's the big one that they brought out first.
And it appears to have Black Widow, the Thing.
Yeah.
Isn't the Heroic Age thing I've seen? Yeah. And a monkey I can't identify.
Gorilla Man, mother. Yeah, bitch.
But apparently Chris knows who it is.
None of you clearly read Agents of Atlas. That's the best book you're not reading.
Have any of us indeed heard of Agents of Atlas?
I've heard of it. Yeah.
You know what the one thing I do like about all these previews? It's John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait.
John Romita Jr. is the greatest living comic book artist, period.
I did not used to like John Romita Jr. It took me a long time before I liked John Romita Jr. And he seems awfully rough on these images, too. I'm not sure. Have we ever seen Romita Jr. paired with Bendis before as well?
God, no. Not as far as I know.
I don't think
it's an interesting. It's like because John Romita Jr. is very much the classic. It's pretty obvious why they've put him on the book. He's the very classic Heroic Age style. And Bendis
has he ever done Avengers? I mean, like a monthly Avengers book?
No.
I don't think he has.
In this image, it's the Bucky Captain America too.
Well, no, he's wearing the Bucky Cap costume, but he's got Steve Rogers' blue eyes.
Oh, does he? I couldn't tell from this far out. I want to see like a Someone comic that has like. The Dick Grayson Batman and the Bucky Captain America sitting outside a psychiatrist's office waiting for their appointments.
God. yeah. That was like one of the parts of that I made myself laugh off of Siege when Bucky hands him the shield and then Cap asks him, like, well, what are you going to do? And in my head, I'm like, I'm going to do what I always do. I'm going to be a douche.
I seem to remember making like lots of jokes back in the day about like Captain America in the 40s dropping his shield and using Bucky attached to his suspenders as a projectile weapon that would pull back on the suspenders. That's about like all I thought of Bucky. So,
is there a chance he could die in Siege?
I hope so.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I enjoyed The Winter Soldier. Brubaker, I love Brubaker's work on Cap. I don't really think Bucky needs to die again. I think they've done too good of a job with the character since he came back.
There's no reason to bring him back. They're not bringing him back.
He's back already. He's a character. He's evolved beyond just being a dead guy at this stage. You know, I don't think it does him justice to kill him again.
Me neither, but he should never have been brought back. Sorry.
It's certainly a controversial thing, but
it's like giving Daredevil his vision back. It's like bringing Uncle Ben back from the dead. It was a bad idea, but it's been surprising.
Everybody went in with that idea, but I mean, I can't speak for any of you, but Brubaker convinced me that there was mileage in it, and then it was worth doing.
I think it was fine when he was Winter Soldier, but when he became Cap, that's when I quit. I quit reading the book after Steve Rogers died.
I've read every single issue of the Brubaker run, and just doesn't do anything for me. Nothing positive anyway.
I think the early issues were good, but after he died, I couldn't get into Bucky as Cap. I just wasn't interested.
So, Siege.
Yes.
Yeah.
That came out this week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happened.
Yeah, it just kept... It's all build-up.
That's the whole issue, really, with one exception.
It's all build-up.
Yeah,
and it's half over now. Could we maybe have some?
It's only four issues.
Yeah, probably mean something would happen.
Well, by the last panel, we should know that it should probably be like solid action.
The last page was the best page of anything.
I know the last page should be a poster.
Yes,
I love the last page. It was incredible. Made my week comic book wise.
You could almost hear the whip of air.
Yeah, I know. You could hear the clang.
Yes.
And you could hear Norman thinking, like, oh.
You're like, Norman, like, should I duck? Why bother?
Yeah.
Taskmaster.
My hope is still to see the Iron Patriot throw a pumpkin bomb at Spider-Man. That's what I want.
Best Pitcher says you might want to turn around, and that's it. There you go.
Yeah. Now, then there's the moment I didn't like in this book, which
I think
is,
we can all agree on that moment. Yeah. Go ahead and please continue.
Should we spoiler it, or are we none? Are we gonna go?
We can say it's this week's comics. We can.
If you haven't read it yet, it's your fault. It's probably the first thing you should be reading this week, given that nothing came out.
Yeah. The Sentry, who I'm good and sick of, on with that, pulls Ares in half. The problem is, it's like this moment of what I'm going to term gornography.
Yes.
I'm just so sick of it. It's not purposeful. All it does is make the comic kind of inappropriate for kids. And
there was a time.
You could have had the gravitas of that moment equally well with, you know, something more implied, or you could have, you know. You could have got away with cutting his head off or all sorts of stuff.
But they did it on DC with Superboy Prime. We have to do it in Marvel. Yeah.
Marvel's really been playing that game as of late, but that's neither here nor there.
What is for?
I don't know.
You know, if we really want to go the gornography route, don't we have places to go that isn't like the main event of like 50 years and you can't read it without seeing Ares' liver?
There was a time when that would have been off-panel, you know, and it would have had all the more effect. Yeah. At the same time,
Apocalypse getting ripped in half in the Age of Apocalypse, and it did not. It was just like it was mostly silhouette, and even there in half, it was just like there's this half and this half, and there's some goo. You know, it wasn't like here's his intestines, here's what he had for lunch.
I mean, I can't deny that it worked in what it sought out to do, because it certainly made me stop and gasp. You know, I'm sure I let out as I was reading it. But I mean, after you just realize, holy shit, he just killed Ares. After you go beyond that, it's like, yeah, but you know, don't squander a great artist like Olivier Coipel doing, you know, gornography like that. You know, that guy's a great classical artist who could do some really great heroic stuff. And you got him doing that, you know?
Yeah, I don't care about Ares as a character, which, you know, some people.
Ares is a character?
Yeah, there you go. But
there was this great issue.
I can acknowledge that how big of a thing that is. I mean, that really makes a difference to me too. Just looking at, even if he's a kind of a throwaway character in my mind, because he's been in pretty much everything Bendis has done lately, hadn't he?
Yeah,
just
been a big Dark Avenger.
He's just hammering it home that the Sentry has the power of a million exploding suns.
He just killed the god of war.
The power of a million exploding retcons. God.
Hey, did anybody read Dark Avengers the week before last?
Nope.
Like the Sentry is apparently Jesus or something now?
Oh, I missed that.
What? catch us up on that, please, Mr. McKee.
I have no idea what the scene was supposed to be implying, but issue 13, I think, of Dark Avenger starts with Moses telling the Jews to mark their doors and all the rest of it. And he talks about how plagues will come upon the land. And we get a single-page splash of that happening down on the ground and in this dark roiling cloud above. And then it cuts to the present day. And basically the course of the issue is, I don't think it's stating anything that we didn't already know regarding the Sentry's origin, although it is mostly covering the Sentry's origin again. It goes with what I think Jenkins wrote that Sentry miniseries a couple of years ago.
He created the Sentry. Yeah.
Jenkins. Yeah. Created him.
You know, the Sentry was such a good idea for like a mini thing.
Yes.
Conceptually.
It was an awesome, great idea for a mini thing, but the whole point was that it was not a sustainable thing.
Yes,
the
sir.
The point that it was too dumb to continue, but it made this great like 5 minute like understory joke. It's almost a joke about retconning.
Yeah, I just want to make this one point. Like half of Marvel's villains and heroes died in that big battle, but it's like one of those things. If you don't state who dies, no one dies.
Right.
Continue.
But it's like they established that they did all those weird. Well, no, anyway, not about the minute, but this issue of Dark Avengers. Basically, it just restated the thing Jenkins did in that thing about how Rob Reynolds stole the formula from a laboratory because he was a junkie looking for chemicals. And I don't really think they added anything new. It's been too long since I read that many. But basically, they revealed that Norman, to get the Sentry under his thumb, remember the scene from maybe you didn't read it, but the scene very early on in New Avengers, Dark Avengers, which I thought was great. And I really enjoyed the idea that they were setting up that early on, which was that Norman
came to the sentry and he basically said, Bob, I can help you because I'm crazy too. And look at what I've got. I can help you be as good as me. And I thought that was great. But then this issue shows that to help him, he gave him the formula that originally given him his powers, because it turned out in the story that he'd been getting periodic doses of it. And apparently, I don't know, maybe it was the withdrawal that's been progressively making him crazy. Anyway, it seems that the void is this much vaunted secret weapon that the Marvel teasers have been hinting Norman has.
Yeah.
And it ends then with the sentry, with the whole black cloud descending from the heavens. So I'm like, what? Is the sentry the wrath of God? Is he the specter? What am I supposed to take away from this? I don't know.
We'll have to wait till the end of the void being beaten by Cyclops last week.
That was freaky.
That was awesome. I always thought that was how the thing with Apocalypse should have ended. When Apocalypse tried to take over his body, I thought Cyclops should have just been like, nope, I got it covered. It's like, where's Apocalypse? He's in here. I'm impressed.
That would have been great. Yes, it's like, yeah, Apocalypse, he had a little bit of Apocalypse in his head, and Apocalypse in the void fought inside his head, yeah, or something like that.
So what happened in this issue is he was just like, he like put the void in a little part of his mind, and he was like, I was raised by Professor Xavier, and I was married to Jean Grey. If you think I can't hide a thought somewhere, like, you got another thing coming.
We can't make any sort of final conclusions, of course, on Siege, because we're only halfway through. But we'll be revisiting.
It's a Brian Michael Bendis event comic. Nothing's happened yet.
Nothing's happened yet.
I hope they get rid of the sentry. That's what I hope for the Age of Heroes.
I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to find some way to do it. Because basically, the next bunch, basically all the Dark Avengers tie-ins, issues of Dark Avengers, seem to be focusing on the sentry. So I assume they're going to do something to give him the boot. But we'll see.
Well, he's just a problem. He's a writing problem. Mm. Every storyline they've done since they brought him back into main continuity, because he was like, hey, we got this like joke about retcons, and now we're actually going to do it and keep him. It was like, okay. So now, every time something big comes up, it's like, well, so why don't you just call the sentry?
Usually they do.
Always like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm busy. No, actually, I'm friends with the Hulk.
Either that, or he gets taken out with startling ease in the first three pages of the story.
It's like, wow.
You don't know what to
power
do with him.
A billion exploding suns is apparently to suck.
I mean, it's like you even take that first story. You take the story arc of New Avengers where he returned. That wasn't even an Avengers story. They had to get the Inhumans in, and then Emma Frost saved everybody. It wasn't an Avengers story.
They're just like, yeah, sorry, the sentry doesn't roll on Shabbat. You know?
So let's go ahead and just
joke.
Yeah. Actually, the Batman Abides. That's all I'll say. So
Siege-wise, it hasn't been bad. It's just been a Bendis.
It's just been Bendis. I mean, you know,
but it's startling.
We're
still getting
on the plane. So
yeah. So it was four issues long, and I think everybody.
I swear it was six.
They couldn't have gotten on the plane in the prequel.
But everybody must have assumed that the reason it was so short, it's not that short, it's four issues, was that DC, Marvel were cottoning on to the fact that you don't have to make it six or eight issues for it to be an event. Because we all know how preposterously drawn out Secret Invasion was. And I think everybody thought and hoped that Siege was going to be punchier, because it was only going to be four issues long. And yet, here we are at the halfway point, and they've only just turned up.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine how the Siege will be, and the story itself, Siege, the four issues, will be anything more than this big blowout. I can't imagine how they're going to deal with Osborn being taken out of power and the Initiative being abolished and all these things if they're only getting started with the fight now halfway through. It's like, is that not the point of this? Is to bring all this to an end? Am I going to have to read 70 epilogue comics?
Yes.
After I finish the four
issues? You will.
They want your money, so yes, you will.
That's the thing.
But they're not even being that bad with the tie-ins. The tie-ins are solely confined to the Avengers books and Dark Wolverine. They're being really good about the tie-ins. They're not even infesting books that they don't feel like they should be part of. I mean, Siege, just in a general sense, Siege is a very well-handled event, I think. It's been done very well. It's not being crammed into every book where it doesn't fit. It's been well done.
Like what we're talking about next week, which is Blackest Night. Yeah. We'll revisit Siege next month once issue 3 comes out and once we know a little bit more. But next week we're going to talk about Blackest Night, which is the big DC event. We've been talking this up on New Soundwave to the point where XV is telling us to shut up. So that's like half the reason we actually started the comic book podcast, was so that we could actually talk about Blackest Night without driving XV mad. So so next week,
too late, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We'll be doing that. Let's go ahead and wrap things up.
I know nothing about Blackest Night, so that's going to be exciting.
Oh yeah,
I've been reading it. All right.
It's worth reading, but it's I'll say no more. Let's
go ahead, next week.
Let's go ahead and wrap things up, guys. Do we have anything else that we want to mention?
Don't think so.
Well, if you didn't find us at tfradio.net, visit us, tfradio.net, for more podcasts, including Radio Free Cybertron, the original Transformers Internet radio show, New Sound Wave, Superhero Time, which is a Sentai and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers podcast, and a rarely updated RSC throwback podcast. Brian Kilby with me. I've had this week Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, Ender, and JD Church. We'll be back next week, and we'll be talking DC's Blackest Night, as well as more of next week's comics. Thank you guys for being here, and thank everyone for listening.
You'll find the Spider-Man. My spider sense is tingling.
It sure is. In such films as Spidey Goes Speed Racing, Spidey Hawaii, Spidey's Girl, Spidey My Pal, Spidey the Underwater Adventure Seeker, Spidey the Fun Licker, Spidey A Drink for All Ages.